Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Do you realize that you may be held responsible for nursing home care for a parent? What can you do to protect yourself and your parent? We'll discuss some strategies to help your parents and you take a look at what you should do in the future and how the things that you should do right now. My guest is Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law attorney. Evan, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me again, Shirley.
Now, this is a fascinating subject because I will tell you, until I read your newsletter, I had no idea that children could be held responsible if their parents had to go into a long-term care situation and they ran out of money.
Yeah, it is a startling reality brought home by a recent Pennsylvania case where a child was actually held responsible for her parents' nursing home bill of over $90,000. And it was... The nursing home was using a Pennsylvania law, which is called a filial responsibility law, which is very similar to Virginia's own filial responsibility law, which says that in some circumstances, children can be held responsible for paying for the needs of their parents.
And now we're talking about if those parents are not able to make those payments themselves. We're talking about the situation where they've run out of money.
Exactly. We have a situation where a parent has run out of money and we have a child who has the financial resources to pay for that parent's nursing home bills, and the law allows the state to come after that child. In my 25 years of practice in the Virginia DC metro area, I've never seen this or heard of this statute being used in Virginia or any other state for that matter. So this recent case out of Pennsylvania came as a shock to the elder law community.
But it has happened in Virginia too, hasn't it?
Has the law been used?
Yes.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. So this is something that we have to consider. It could happen. And I suppose it depends on the nursing home. Would the nursing home be the instigator of a case to collect from the kids? Now, and that's assuming that the parents did not get onto Medicaid or not.
That's correct. The nursing home might be the instigator. It could be a hospital if a parent had medical bills not covered by insurance. So having the proper health insurance is important, but it would more likely be in the context of a nursing home where a parent has run out of money and the children or the family have not planned in advance have not gotten the parent on to Medicaid. Because the big exception to this statute is that it does not apply if the parent is on Medicaid. So the lesson here to avoid this kind of filial responsibility law is for the members of the sandwich generation who are taking care of their own kids and their parents to help their parents plan ahead and do long-term care planning so that they will be eligible for Medicaid if and when they do wind up in a nursing home.
Okay, now what can they do? I mean, people who are listening to us saying, oh my goodness, what if this were to happen to me? My parents, I don't know if they've done the planning. So how do you go about this, Evan? Suppose I come into you and I say, I've got elderly parents. I want you to help me set up a plan that will protect them and protect me because I've got kids. I got to put them through school, that sort of thing. So how would you advise me to proceed?
It depends at what stage your parents are.
Let's assume at this point that they're healthy, living independently with limited resources.
Okay. Then the answer for that scenario is for these parents to consider establishing a special type of asset protection trust. It's called the Living Trust Plus. This is actually a trust that I created about 6 or 7 years ago, and I licensed this trust to attorneys all around the country. And this is a trust that protects your assets from probate plus lawsuits, plus, most importantly, nursing home expenses.
That protects the kids' assets, not the parent.
Well, it could be both. Typically, this would be done by the parent.
Okay.
Who is still healthy and living independently, but recognizing the reality of possibly needing nursing home care in the future. So typically that parent would set up the Living Trust Plus. The child's role is that the child would typically be the instigator by finding the elder law attorney, preferably a certified elder law attorney, who is licensed to provide the Living Trust Plus and possibly setting up the appointment and coming in for the initial free consultation with the attorney.
And being aware of what's going on.
Exactly, being aware.
So this, yeah, you need to have a dialogue. I mean, between the parent and child, obviously, there has to be a continuing dialogue in terms of, well, I mean, that's part of what family's for. You need to talk about these issues.
Exactly.
It can be hard, though.
And all too often, yeah, parents simply ignore the issue and never talk about it, and children are sometimes too scared to talk about it.
Okay, now let's talk about this Living Trust Plus that you mentioned, which would be a form of protecting your assets against all of your funds having to go to, say, paying for a nursing home.
Exactly.
How would that work?
Well, the way the Living Trust Plus works is it's very similar to a revocable living trust that most of your listeners are probably familiar with, which is a tool to avoid probate. But with the Living Trust Plus, once you put your assets into the trust, those assets cannot be taken back directly by the person who creates the trust. They are making an irrevocable transfer to the trust. Now, the person who's creating the trust still can control those assets. They can act as the trustee of the trust and manage the assets, selling for the house, for example, that may be in the trust.
But if you sell the house, the money has to go into the trust?
The money would go into the trust, exactly.
Okay.
And then the trust could buy a new house, or the trust could rent the house, and the parent who created the trust can receive the rental income. And if there's money in the trust, the parent receives the investment income, so any interest and dividends are also received.
Okay, so you would get, so the parents have set up this Living Trust Plus. So what they have done is taken their assets, they put them into this, it's irrevocable. Once they're there, they're there. So you can't decide you're going to go out and spend $100,000 on a new car, I gather, is what you're telling me.
Well, yes and no. There is an emergency backdoor to this trust.
I don't need a car that badly.
well, hopefully you don't. But let's say, well, first of all, your
car. Well, first off, let's take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law attorney. And we're talking about the things you need to know as you deal with aging parents. We're talking about focusing on children, the kids here, and how you can help your parents and the things that need to be done. So we were just talking about the Living Trust Plus, Evan. I'm sorry. I need to take a break there.
No problem. In your example of wanting to purchase a car, the simple answer there is that the trustee of the trust can purchase the car using money that may be in the trust.
That's what I was going to ask you
now. So the trust can own the car, and the parent can drive the car.
Okay, now who would typically be the manager of this trust? Are you going to have to get an outsider that you pay fees to, or can this be a member of the family, or who can
it be? It would typically be a member of the family, either a trusted adult child, or if the parent who's setting up the trust is still competent and desires to manage their own financial affairs, then that parent can be his or her own trustee.
But you could not take out the primary assets. You could only take out the earnings from those assets.
Exactly.
So you've got to make certain that the income that you have is sufficient to meet your needs before you set up this irrevocable trust. Or, let me just go further, would you want to take part of your assets and put them in this protection plan and then keep the rest of them so that they're more liquid that you could use at your discretion?
That's exactly right. We often advise people to keep $50,000 to $100,000 of their asset, liquid assets outside of the trust. That may be a retirement plan, for instance, which can't be owned by a trust unless you liquidated the retirement plan and paid the taxes first, and most people don't want to do that. So yeah, there may be liquid money outside of the trust. But if there's not enough money in the trust, and let's use an example of rather than the car, which the trust could pay for, let's say the parent sets this up and wants to go on a cruise, which mm-hmm. the trust can't go on. So let's say the parent wants to take out $50,000 to go on a six-month cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the parent is the trustee, they can simply write a check for $50,000 to one of their children, or who is one of the beneficiaries of this trust. And then without any prearrangement, the following day, the parent can ask the child for that money back, or ask the child to use that money to book the cruise for them.
That's not going to create any kind of a tax situation for the child who gets the money, even temporarily?
No, there's no income tax. It's considered a gift to the child.
That's more than the law permits for a particular gift in any one year.
Well, there's a lot of confusion people have about the gift tax laws.
I guess I must be sitting here being one of them.
What most people have heard of is there's an annual exclusion. It used to be $10,000 a long time ago. It's now actually up to $14,000 per year per person. That's how much each person can give away during a year without eating into their lifetime exemption.
And that is to a specific individual. If you had three kids, you could give each of them $14,000 if you have enough money to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean you're ever going to pay tax on that money. And mm-hmm. the recipient of a gift never pays tax. The recipient could get $1 billion and never pay tax.
Over a period of years.
Right. It's the giver of the gift that might potentially pay estate taxes, but that's only if you give away more than the lifetime exemption, which is currently $5.25 million.
Okay.
So unless somebody's going to be giving away either during their life or upon their death more than $5 million, the gift tax is really not something that people need to worry about right now.
So I guess I'm confused. Then if you were to give someone $20,000...
Technically, what you would have
would that be taxable?
Potentially taxable. What happens?
But not necessarily. Say this year.
No, it would be potentially taxable when you die. What would happen?
If you gave away more than $5 million. Well,
exactly.
Good luck with having all that money.
Exactly.
Okay. Right.
So
stock market go up, please.
Yeah, you'd have to file a gift tax return. Saying that you made a potentially taxable gift of $6,000, and that the IRS would just keep that on file until your death
and add that to your
estate. And if that's over $5 million, then there's going to be taxes.
I see. So there is some confusion. I was confused on it at any rate. Okay. So we're setting this up. So we can set up this trust and put the money in there. The money can be taken out with some, as you say, with some manipulation.
Through the back door.
Through the back door. And got to have a kid you can trust.
Exactly.
You got to make sure there's the right person in there.
You've nailed it. And that's one of the key elements of the Living Trust Plus is you need to have a backdoor beneficiary who is trustworthy, financially stable, doesn't have judgments against them,
mm-hmm.
someone you can
mm-hmm.
trust. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's really key. So this is one way of protecting your assets so that let's take this a step farther. Suppose one of the parents ends up in a nursing home. One dies and the other one ends up in long-term care. So that money can or cannot be used, must or must not be used to pay nursing home care.
As long as that money has been in the Living Trust Plus for at least 5 years, then that money is protected and will not have to be used to pay for the nursing home care.
Now, then that would put the person on Medicaid.
Right. The whole idea of this, the Living Trust Plus, is to protect the assets after 5 years in connection with Medicaid, so that if you then run out of assets outside the trust and you're down below $2,000, which is the Medicaid resource limit, then you can apply for Medicaid, and the money in the trust will not count against you. However, that money, as long as it's being managed by a good, loving, trusted child, that money can be used for the parent's benefit to enhance the parent's life by paying for things that Medicaid doesn't cover, replacing lost or broken dentures and eyeglasses and hearing aids, even paying for a private sitter to be with their parent who's in the nursing home.
I see. Yes. So it does allow the quality of life to be enhanced.
That's what it's all about.
At the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's one tool that people should keep in mind if you have a fair amount of assets.
Absolutely.
And at least putting part of them into an asset protection plan. Okay.
Exactly. Even we have a lot of clients who don't have that much in the way of financial assets, but they have a house.
Protect it.
And they may just put their house in the trust.
But the key here is it has to be done 5 years before you end up having to go into a facility.
Into a nursing home.
So you've got to do some long-range planning, and none of us know whether we're going to end up there or not. So, yeah,
exactly.
I got you. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Evan Farr. He's a certified elder law attorney. You can find some wonderful information on all kinds of issues affecting your parents. It may be useful for you, or it may be useful for your parents. The website is Farr Law Firm. That's F-A-R-R. lawfirm.com, farlawfirm.com. Anyway, Evan, you were telling me you're one of only like 500 certified elder law attorneys in the country?
That's right, Shirley. Yeah, the only certification for elder law attorneys is this CELA certification, and there are fewer than 500 in the country.
Wow.
And that's surprising given the aging population.
It is, yes.
But the reason for it is because of the complexity of the laws. The Medicaid laws are actually the most complex laws in existence.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, is Medicaid law, getting Medicaid, is that based solely on need? Somebody who's listening to us and saying, well, you know, I'm out of a job. My parent needs to go to a nursing home. They have no assets. Are they going to be able to get Medicaid?
That they might.
Or they might not?
Well, it's very difficult to get on your own.
How do you mean?
The government does not like people to go on Medicaid, obviously, because it's using up government money. So
right.
They make it difficult. They throw up a lot of hurdles. They make the application process very daunting. So many people who try to apply on their own wind up getting rejected, sometimes over and over again.
Good grief.
Many people either give up, or they may eventually come to a certified elder law attorney such as myself and get help in applying.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the better time to come to us is when they still have the parent still has money left, so that the child doesn't have to pay our fee out of their pocket.
Okay, now you can plan ahead. Is that what you're telling me, to go on to Medicaid? That's kind of surprising. I would have thought it would be when you run out of money, but you're saying it isn't.
Well, one of the techniques of planning ahead is what we just talked about, the Living Trust Plus.
Right.
That's
right.
Planning way ahead.
Yes, it is.
That's 5 years ahead. Now, if somebody has a parent who is in a nursing home or about to go into a nursing home and looking to get that parent on nursing home, you can still plan ahead. You know, we can do Medicaid asset protection planning for someone, even if they've already are in a nursing home or been there for years. I've had clients we've gotten on Medicaid who've already been in a nursing home for 10 years and have spent over $1 million of assets privately, whose family thought they would never last that long, but eventually they come to us to protect what's left. So the sooner a family with a loved one in a nursing home comes to an attorney like myself, the better and the more we can protect. But the reality is there are dozens of Medicaid asset protection strategies that can be used to protect assets and get somebody on Medicaid, even when that person is already in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm learning a lot today. You're a great fountain of information here. Okay, what are some of the other things that children should be concerned about with their aging parents? What kind of life plans should they have? I guess we know they should have a durable power of attorney or...
Absolutely. Durable power of attorney is the most important legal document that every person needs to have. Really, everyone over age 18 mm-hmm. should have a durable power of attorney, because if you don't and you're in a car accident or you, for whatever reason, become unable to manage your own affairs... Without a durable power of attorney, someone's going to have to go to court, have you declared incompetent, and become your legal guardian and conservator. And by becoming your conservator, that person is embarking upon the nightmare of probate. It's called living probate in this case, because the person whose estate is involved is still living. And this type of living probate can go on, you know, for 30, 40, 50 years.
Wow. And a
power of attorney avoids that. The key, though, is that not all powers of attorney are created equal. And it's very important that a power of attorney contain asset protection powers. A typical power of attorney that somebody might get from a general practice attorney or off the internet or from a software program, it typically does not allow gifting at all. Or if it does, it limits it to the annual exclusion we talked mm-hmm. about a few
yes.
minutes ago, the $14,000 a year. And what's really needed for everybody is a power of attorney that allows unlimited gifting of assets. And it has to specifically have
that word unlimited
in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what will allow an adult child, a caregiver child, to do the type of Medicaid asset protection planning that needs to be done in a crisis when the mm-hmm. parent is about to go into the nursing home.
Wow. So, yes, and as you pointed out, this is essential for anyone because – now, what about – let's suppose a husband and wife – and one of them ends up in a hospital in a coma. Does the spouse need a power of attorney? I would suspect not,
yeah,
unless they do.
They do. There is no automatic decision making between spouses.
Nothing giving. I see.
Nothing is automatic. So if they,
you lawyers, just tie us up. I'm telling
well,
you.
Well, that's
the way it is, right?
it's the lawmakers.
It's the lawmakers.
Not all of whom are lawyers, but
that's
true. Many of them are. But for medical decisions. So if you've got a married couple, spouses in the hospital or nursing home. The healthy spouse can make medical decisions under the laws of pretty much every state.
But of the other things.
For signing legal documents, for selling the house, for taking out a reverse mortgage on the house, anything involving assets that are titled jointly, a spouse cannot do that without a power of attorney.
You have opened my eyes. Actually, we do have that. I mean, we've done planning. But, Evan, thank you so much. And for our listeners, the website is farlawfirm.com. That's spelled F-A-R-R, farlawfirm.com. Evan, thank you so much for sharing this information with our listeners. And just to let you all know, you've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I am Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.